The Seattle Mariners blew a 10-game lead in the AL West, and after getting swept by the Dodgers this week, fired manager Scott Service. We'll break down that and all of yesterday's action on today's First Pitch. Yes, welcome on into First Pitch for Friday, August 23rd. I am Lindsey Crosby with Athlon Sports. He is Christian Rao, managing editor of InsideTheCardinals.com. And Christian, not a huge slate of games yesterday, right? Plenty of stuff happened, though. But before we get into the results of the games, we got to talk about a team that was off yesterday. The Seattle Mariners took the day off to get rid of manager Scott Service. And here's the frustrating thing, I think, with how this went down. Scott Service did not find out he was fired from management. He was a couple hours out of a meeting that was scheduled between him and Jerry Dipoto, president of baseball operations, when a social media alert let him know that he had been fired. I guess the first question is this. Firing Scott Service, is this the right move, or is this a scapegoat from the front office for poor roster construction?
Ooh, yeah, I think a scapegoat's a good way to say it, I think, because what else can he have done right now with the roster he was given? However, I do think that there are some ways that you should probably point some fingers at Scott Service. He did blow a 10-game lead in the West. So, and they've been 20-30 in their last 50 games. So I think there's a little bit of pointing fingers. I think it was due. I think it was due for Scott Service to get fired, especially after, as well as they were going, as well as they were in a playoff lead, and now all of a sudden the inevitable Houston Astros look like they've took that division over. So I think it was due, but I also do think there's a little bit of scapegoatness. If I'm not mistaken, I think Jerry Dipoto is also in his final year of his contract too, so he might be looking to find a way to keep his job. So I'm interested in this new decision by Seattle. They go ahead and pick up Dan Wilson to be the new manager. And I say manager, not interim manager.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting, right? That they don't give him that interim thing. He doesn't have any managerial experience, but they go ahead and say, you are the manager moving forward. That's a bold move coming from a team that has had some manager issues, apparently, enough to be able to fire your manager in the middle of a season when you are still in playoff contention. So that's a bold move. So I'm interested to see how that one plans out.
Yeah, I feel like that's kind of the example of how some teams have a manager, but the strategic decisions are being driven by the front office, right? There, I can't imagine that there's a lot of questions about how to handle things for a lineup, for deploying the pitching staff and things like that, if they're just cool with giving a completely inexperienced manager run of it. And we saw something similar in Chicago when they fired their manager with the White Sox. Grady Sizemore was originally came into the organization as an intern, right? He applied for and got an internship, I think making like $20 an hour or something, and moved up and is now the manager of the team. Same situation. There's only, you know, baseball, there's only so much that you can really impact. You're really making in-game decisions. You're helping make in-game decisions, but they give you a chart on when to use what relievers when and all of that. Yeah. And working on morale in the clubhouse. And so I kind of agree that I think Scott Service is getting the short end of the stick here. He didn't build a roster that leads baseball in strikeouts for the third straight year. I mean, the Mariners, as of this morning, 1,308 strikeouts. The MLB average is just over 1,000. There's no other team above 1,300. There's only two other teams above 1,200 strikeouts, and they're at 1,308. Their batting average of .216 is worse than the Chicago White Sox. The White Sox have a .219. Their OPS, they're obviously cursed. The OPS is an exact .666. I mean, they've dealt with injuries. They've dealt with just underperformance from just about everybody. And yeah, it feels like Scott Service got fired trying to save Jerry Dipoto's job. We'll see how that goes. Maybe a new manager buys him another year or so. But things are not, for having such a great rotation, things are not going that well. We're not trending in the right direction in Seattle, and that's got to be frustrating for Seattle fans. But then on the flip side, Angels fans didn't make a firing, and they're also frustrated. Perry Minazzi and the general manager was extended by the Angels, despite the fact that LA has not made the postseason in multiple years, arguably botched the Shohei Ohtani trade deadline last year. There was, in retrospect, there was no reason not to move him. They traded a bunch of, they traded some of their best remaining prospects away, trying to find more reinforcements, collapsed after the deadline, and waived all of those guys less than a month later. Was extending Perry Minazian the right move? And does it really matter what they do when Art Moreno is still the owner of the team?
That's a really good point. That last one he said about, does it really matter? I don't think it's a good move personally, because what has he done in the last 4 years since he's been in that job? Not much. He hasn't had any, he hasn't had more than 77 wins in a season when he had Shohei Ohtani, when he had Mike Trout on his team. Now, I know there's been injury concerns, and I know there's been a couple other things going through that he's had to deal with, but that's what general managers have to deal with. Lindsay, I mean, let's look at the 2021 Braves. They had to deal with injuries. They figured it out. So the Angels, they, I don't know why you do this. Maybe because they want some kind of structure in that general manager role, because they had I think four different GMs between 2011 and 2021 before they went and hired him. Four. So maybe that's what they're looking for. They have some decent prospects that are coming up right now. So maybe there's light at the end of the tunnel. However, weird timing. You are battling the Oakland A's for last place in the American League West, and you decide now is the right time to extend your general manager to see if, you know, moving forward. I feel like this could have been an off-season thing. I don't think this is, it made sense to do this in the regular season when your team is struggling again and you don't have Mike Trout again. What does this do to the fans? This is just, I feel like this is going to alienate them even more.
Yeah, so kind of looking at some of the stats, ninth consecutive losing record if they finish the way we think they are this year. They'll miss the playoffs for the 10th consecutive year. And the last time they won a playoff game was 2009. But here's the thing with Perry Minazian. Like, the core, you can argue that they are starting to build a little bit of a core. Shortstop Zach Neto, very promising. Catcher Logan Ohapi was a good get to get him from Philly for, I believe, they made two deals. I think that might have been the Brandon Marsh deal. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think it's the Marsh deal. Yeah.
Yeah. But like, it's a really good get for a guy that was not working out there in Philly, in LA. Ben Joyce looks like a pretty good reliever. Nolan Schonwell, they rushed him to the majors, but I mean, he looks like he can play first base and he's starting to come into his own. Christian Moore, I mean, the first round pick, the second baseman out of Tennessee, is tearing up the minors, and the joke is he'll be up for the season's over. But I mean, looks like he could be a little bit of a piece as well. And so I think he's done, after some initial missteps, that all pitcher draft was weird in retrospect. And none of those guys have been impact major leaguers, but I feel like he's done the best he can with a situation. I've talked to people that said like the analytics department is virtually non-existent. The player development is bad. And part of the reason they've rushed guys to the majors is just to get them with the best coaches that they have in the organization, their major league staff. And I can kind of see the argument behind get Christian Moore in front of Ron Washington to help him with his defense at second. I think he's done the best that he can. I just don't think it matters as long as Art Moreno's the manager. I'm sorry, the owner of the team. He's the one that wanted to sign Rendon. He's the one that doesn't have the proper depth and the proper infrastructure around Mike Trout to keep him from having to play center field every day and keep him healthy and all of that. And I don't think it really matters if they hire him or extend him or whatever, as long as Art Moreno still owns a team.
Yeah, I mean, right now, I don't see how he's any better than what Billy Epler was, the guy he replaced. But yeah, if these younger players turn out to be decent, and as you mentioned, they've rushed them to the majors, so they know that there is a hole in this major league roster, and obviously there's a hole still in the farm system because of that. But you make perfect sense. There's not many managers in the league that are better developing and helping develop young talent than Ron Washington. So I'm excited to see when they bring Christian Moore up, what they he can do with him. So if that's the case, if they develop a young core, Lindsay, and they can get into, back into the race, I mean, the best thing for baseball, I think we've said this for years now, is getting Mike Trout in the playoffs. So if he can find a way to do that, people will love him, especially if he does it the next 2 years under his new extension.
Exactly. I mean, it's all going to come down to wins in the field, and it all is going to come down to you got to have a healthy Mike Trout, and you have to be able to get something out of Anthony Rendon, right? Okay, moving on from a guy who's been disappointed at third base in Rendon to a guy who has not been disappointed at third base, Jose Ramirez has secured another 30-30 season. He stole a base against the Yankees yesterday. So 32 homers, 30 stolen bases, batting .273 at age 31. Here's the thing, though. Cleveland dropped the series to the Yankees. They've lost 5 of their last 6 games. And I'm continuing to have questions about, can Cleveland find the offense, and can Cleveland even find the pitching to maintain first place in the AL Central, knowing that they've got multiple teams bearing down on them? Do they have what it takes to win the division?
If they keep playing like this, there's no way, because Kansas City and Minnesota are right on the necks, right? The series, the way that the series ended last night against the Yankees was pretty sad. I should mention that there was too many walks in that game. I mean, on each side, there was 14 walks between both teams. It was 8 for Cleveland, 6 for New York, but New York capitalized on those walks. Cleveland did not. Cleveland only got 1 hit in the entire game. Plus those 6 walks, they still were 0-for-3 in runners with scoring positions. So Jose Ramirez can do as much as you want. He can be the first guardian in history to get the second 30-30 season. But if no one else around him is hitting, and he didn't hit last night, the only one who got a hit was Steven Kwan, which is not a shocker. But if Ramirez is not hitting, if Cleveland is not hitting, period, the Lane Thomas deal at the deadline has not been great. What are you going to do? So, and we know that there's been questions with the pitching rotation. The bullpen's been great, but how great can that be? You know, that is, I feel like the bullpen can't be your strength. It has to be something that can, you know, strengthen other spots, or just be something where you're not worried when you get to it, but it can't be your number one strength, Lindsay, not when you're at this point in the season.
Yeah. I mean, having a great bullpen doesn't matter if you're down by 5 entering the seventh inning. It doesn't matter. You know, they need a lead to preserve. And I think that's one of the big issues for Cleveland. I've been pretty consistent on this show the last couple weeks that I think the Kansas City Royals are going to end up winning this division. I think they're going to jump the Twins. I think they're going to beat Cleveland. Cleveland is they're returning home tonight for a series against the defending champion Texas Rangers, who are on track to not make the postseason. We had a fun chat about that with Bruce Bochy yesterday. But then after that, they host the Royals for 4, and then they go to Kansas City to open September and play 3 more. And I am predicting the end of that road trip, which is Kansas City and then the Dodgers, and then they get to wrap up with somewhat of a break against the White Sox. I'm going to argue that the end of that series, Kansas City is in first place in the Central, and Cleveland is not. I don't quite know what the Twins have coming up between here and there. Correction, the Twins play the Braves next week. So my argument is that Twins versus Braves, Guardians versus Royals, the Royals are in first place at the end of that road trip. So on by Friday the 13th, you will see the Kansas City Royals in first place in the Central.
Yeah, I could see that happening. You know, we were talking about this tight race all week, and it's not going to stop. We're not going to stop talking about this race because it's one of the most interesting ones in baseball. But I was talking at earlier this week, and I said, I think that eventually we're going to see one of these teams fall out of the race. I think that we're not going to get 3 teams in the playoffs with American League Central. And right now that's starting to look like the Cleveland Guardians.
I mentioned the Atlanta Braves. They beat Philadelphia last night. I believe it was 3-2. Yeah, 3-2. So they won the series against the Philadelphia Phillies 2 games to 1. Interesting stuff in this series. The winning team scored only three runs every day. It was 3-1 Atlanta in the opener, 3-2 Philly in game two, and then 3-2 Atlanta in the finale. But this all kind of comes back to Atlanta pitching. In the series, and I had this stat on Twitter last night, in this series, Braves pitchers in 27 innings allowed 13 hits and 5 runs. They walked 5. They struck out 32 Phillies. But here was the big thing for me. Those 32 strikeouts were not evenly distributed across the lineup. That top three, Kyle Schwarber, Bryce Harper, Trey Turner, combined to go 2-for-33 in this series with 14 strikeouts.
Wow.
So this Atlanta team, one third of their starting lineup was guys who were DFA'd by their previous organizations midseason. This Atlanta team took 2 out of 3 from Philly. They have won all three series this season against Philly so far. Philly has to host Atlanta for 4 next week. Should they legitimately be worried about losing the division to the Atlanta Braves? To this Atlanta Braves team?
Yeah, especially if, you know, they, I don't know if they'll be able to exactly lose it by the time next week rolls around, but it'll probably get closer if they have another series loss. And I'm pretty sure the final game of the series is on Sunday Night Baseball, ESPN2, which is another epic way to end that season series. But man, I mean, how can you not be nervous after what just happened? That the Atlanta Braves are finding a way to figure out how to continue to win games with Whit Merrifield in place for Ozzie Albies, with Gio Urshela in place for Austin Riley, who has looked great, by the way, who has looked like a gold glover at third base. It's yeah. Like Austin Riley never left at that position when it comes to it. And his bats look good, too.
Oh, quick note on that before you go on. Sorry. Urshela started 4 double plays in this series.
Right.
He doubled up. He started double plays of Trey Turner twice. Turner was only doubled up 4 times this season entering this series. Atlanta got him twice on double plays. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. No, that was really interesting. I think 3 of them came on the second game of the series, if I remember.
The one correctly. They lost. One of them, yeah.
Right. The one they lost. It's just been really impressive to see what Atlanta's done. And we haven't even got to the pitching portion. And I think there's 2 really big pitchers we need to focus on. And first, I want to mention before we get to the, we'll close with the closer because I think that's important. But yeah. Spencer Schwellenbach, I think he is so impressive, Lindsay. And I want to ask you a question. I want to ask you, do you feel like this guy, after seeing what he's done the last couple games so far and so far in 2024, do you see ace material in him?
I think so. And for me, Spencer Schwellenbach's been so impressive because of he seems to have that natural understanding of pitching and ability to rapidly evolve and get better. So kind of reminder on this guy, starting shortstop at Nebraska, he was the closer in his final year at Nebraska. Atlanta drafted him as a pitcher. Several teams had him on their boards as a position player, right? But when it gets him as a pitcher, he has Tommy John surgery. He gets like 60-something innings in the minors last year, and then he gets called up straight from Double-A this year and is destroying. But since he's been called up, just since he came to the majors, he's added in a sinker, and he now has a legitimate 6-pitch arsenal that I believe 4 of those pitches have all been thrown just around 20% of the time. It is virtually impossible to game plan for Spencer Schwellenbach, because you may get a curveball, you may get a slider, you may get a sinker, you may get a cutter, you may get a splitter, you may get a 4-seamer. Like he keeps rolling those through. Against Philly last night, 4 hard hit balls, I believe it was a 36% CSW in 6 2/3 innings. 4 different pitches, 15% of the time, right? He started leaning on things as they worked, but just was mixing and matching. And the thing is, just hitters are never comfortable against Spencer Schwellenbach. And to me, I don't know what it is about Spencer S pitchers in Atlanta, and him and Spencer Strider are different types of guys, right? Because Strider's a 2-pitch guy. He's a fastball slider guy. He added the curveball last year. This year, we saw it for 2 starts and then he got hurt. Schwellenbach's throwing 6, but the ability to, one, he's been huge for this team this season with all the different injuries they've had and needing rotation help. And then he's going to be huge going forward simply because you might lose Max Fried. You might lose Charlie Morton. They're both free agents. Morton's also super old. And then you have questions about when Strider's going to come back and what type of form he's going to be in after having the internal brace surgery early this year. So Schoenbach's huge. I think right now, if you were planning a postseason series, he's probably in contention for a game three start. Like, I think that's how good he's been. It's Sale and Fried, and then you're debating between Lopez and Schoenbach. And that just, the fact that that is where we are with this rookie blows my mind.
Yeah, you're debating against a all-star to be a potential, not a bad place to have, especially when you've already lost Spencer Strider for the year. That's a good problem to have. Hey, speaking of pitchers, Iglesias, are you kidding me?
I mean, Raisel Iglesias is virtually automatic at this point, okay? Went into last night's game, having converted 19 save opportunities, had not allowed a run since June 16th. That's now 20, and it's not like he's facing bums or guys who have never had success against him. His very first batter of the ninth inning was Bryce Harper, who was 6-for-9 with 4 career homers off of Raisel Iglesias. Strikes him out. Struck out the side. ERA's down to 145, fifth in baseball with 28 saves. And the communication staff in the game notes that we get had a great note. 15-inning scoreless streak. It's tied with Michael Kopech of the Dodgers and Osvaldo Beto of the Oakland A's for second longest in baseball this year. And Sarah Langs had an even better stat. He's retired 35 consecutive batters. It's Atlanta's longest streak in the expansion era. The last time an MLB pitcher did this was 2014, Yusmeiro Pettit, who I completely forgot about until her tweet. But think about that. He's retired 35 consecutive batters. In relief, Raisel Iglesias has thrown a perfect game plus some, plus three plus additional some. Innings. Because 27 plus. Outs is a perfect game. He's retired almost three additional innings worth of guys after a perfect game. I can't remember seeing a Braves closer this dominant since maybe the pinnacle of the Craig Kimbrel days. But this is amazing to see, and I'm so glad that we get this right now when you need these amazing performances, because the offense has been struggling because of injuries.
Yeah, you've given up. The bullpen has had a lot of issues, and having Iglesias just hold it down there, not giving up a single run since June 16th. That's exactly what Atlanta needs if they want to get themselves back in the NL East race. And hey, it doesn't look like it's slowing down anytime soon, Lindsay.
Exactly. Braves will host the Nationals this weekend for Alumni Weekend before they head to Minnesota next week to face the Twins, and then head to Philly for 4 next weekend. All right, time for quick pitch. We're going to kind of some interesting roster moves and transactions either happening or set to happen. Kind of want to get rapid fire quick thoughts from you on some of these. Pitchers being sent to AAA. Baltimore sent Trevor Rogers. The Padres sent Matt Waldron, the knuckleballer. Who do you trust to figure it out and get back to the majors first?
Waldron. I think Waldron figures it out first because we've seen success with him in San Diego. For Trevor Rogers, we haven't seen it with him since he's gone to Baltimore. Has a 7.11 ERA since making the trade. So I think he will figure it out because I like what Baltimore does with pitching, but I think Waldron does it first enough to be able to be an impact in the playoffs.
Yeah, Waldron, 22 runs, last 14 2/3 innings. I think a lot of it's just the knuckleball. If you're not feeling it, you can get destroyed, and that's what happened to him. I think he's back before the postseason. Jason Hayward gets DFA'd by the Los Angeles Dodgers. They had to activate Chris Taylor, had to find somebody to move. They're moving on from Jason Hayward. Is this it for Jason Hayward? Do you think he has a chance to find a job for next year after how he performed this year, or you think this is it for him in his career?
I think it's done after this season. Maybe somebody picks him up, maybe a postseason team that needs an outfielder, an extra depth. I mean, he's a great locker room guy as well, but I think if he doesn't stick to a playoff team before this season's over, yeah, I think it's time he hangs it up. 15 years, though, is impressive.
It absolutely is. And one of the prospects, kind of really my first big prospect miss, simply because you look at the frame, you look at what he does in batting practice, you think he's going to be a 30 or 40 home run guy, and he just was never really that type of player. And that's on me. I was young and didn't really understand prospect evaluation that well. Arguably still don't. But I thought he was going to be more of a power hitter than he was. But he was a really good major leaguer for a while. Yankees are scheduled to activate Jazz Chisholm Jr. from the injured list today. He has a UCL injury and his non-throwing arm. He's been doing defensive drills about the entire time. Home series versus the Rockies. Is this something they activate him here to kind of let him work his way back into form? Or do you think this is something where they just desperately need him right now?
I don't think it's desperately need. I think form's a good point. They just had a great series against the Guardians, and then you're going in against a team that's not playoff contention. You're at home. Get him comfortable back into playing again. Maybe you don't play him the entire weekend. Maybe you only give him 2 of the 3 games just to get back into it. But you mentioned he's hadn't had issues throwing. They showed him in multiple drills throwing during the Little League game, and it looked like he was going 100% with his throws on base there. So yeah, it's not an injury to his throwing arm, and that's important because what he's done at third base since he's made the trade to New York has been quite impressive, Lindsay. I'm actually really surprised how well he's acclimated over to the hot corner. Having his bat in the lineup, if that's something that they feel like he can do just fine, which if they're activating him, they know that that's an important thing, will be huge to have him instead of someone like Peraza in that lineup. So yeah, it's got to be exciting for Yankees fans to get Jazz back, especially what they've seen from him since the trade.
He's been so good. And looking at the minor league thing, MLB.com put out a list of prospects that can make an impact down the stretch. I kind of scanned the list for contenders. My choice for a guy who could make the most impact, Jason Dominguez of the New York Yankees. We saw them use him as a 27th man in the doubleheader last weekend. But I think he's their guy to replace Alex Verdugo, who's batting .227 on this roster. And I don't necessarily know how you work work everything out to not have to get rid of Verdugo. Can you afford to put him on the bench or something? But if Dominguez can come in and play center field, let Judge play left instead of having to run around in center so much, I definitely think it helps this team more than having Verdugo in left and batting .227 with a .353 slug.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think Jason Dominguez is probably the most impactful out of that list, and we'll put that article in our show notes so you can check it out. But if I have to pick someone different, I'm gonna go with Kobe May. I'm gonna stay in the AL East, but I'm gonna go with the Baltimore Orioles. Yeah. I don't think he makes a huge of an impact where you would replace someone like a Dominguez to Verdugo, but just having him in your bench depth with the holdover, especially since you lost Jordan Westberg for some time. I think he'd be a huge asset to be with the Orioles, and I want to see him up anyway. So I'm excited to see him. You got to think he's going to be the guy for September call up. So, but I do think Dominguez is the dude that's going to be like the biggest impact for all of September call ups this year.
Yeah. And if Mayo can acclimate to the majors well, I could see him making a rookie of the year push next year that would give them 4 consecutive rookies of the year if he gets it. The power is real, and Philly kind of gave the blueprint. If you don't, just ball go boom, right? Who cares about defense? Just hit a ton of home runs and you can win, and Kobe Mayo can help you with that. So I kind of like that. Okay. Previewing the series, previewing the weekend's action across baseball. We're going to each pick a series that we think could be most impactful when we look back at the end of the year. I've got Philly going to Kansas City. This to me is an interesting matchup simply because Philly is obviously, they've not had the post All-Star break that they want. They're reeling right now. And then when you look at this series, Kansas City is incredibly hot. Taijuan Walker goes on Friday night. You have to think this guy will be his last chance to figure everything out. He faces Michael Wacha. Not a good thing. They have a TBD on Saturday versus Singer. And then if my math is right, I believe it's Cole Reagans on Sunday. And so this is just it's a huge series for both teams. And I think if Philly struggles in this series, they are legitimately in trouble when it comes to the East, because again, they got to host Atlanta for 4 next week, and they have not shown the ability to beat this Braves team to hold on to the East.
Yeah, I think it's actually Lugo on Sunday, which is even worse he's been absolutely insane. I think this is a huge series for both teams, especially the Royals trying to chase the AL Central, and the Phillies after that loss to the Braves. They need to get a bounce back. I'm going to go quickly, and I'm going to go with the San Diego Padres, New York Mets. They already started the series. It's a 4-game series, but both of them in a playoff race for the NL wild card, which is an absolutely wild race. Padres lost the last 2. Mets have won the last 2, and they're right on the cusp between a borderline of the wild card. Padres only have a 3-game lead up on the Atlanta Braves for the second place of the wild card. Mets are just right there, just on the outside looking in, a game and a half behind. So if the Mets can win this series, make that even closer, that's going to be even a big deal for the Padres, Diamondbacks, Braves, and even more for the rest of the regular season.
Yeah, last night was Cease versus Severino. These matchups this weekend, Musgrove versus Blackburn, King versus Peterson, Perez versus Quintana. Really interesting to kind of see how this series goes. This has been First Pitch for Friday, August 23rd. If you're listening on YouTube, do us a favor, subscribe to the channel, leave a comment down below, click on the notification bell so you know when we drop these new episodes and the happy hours going forward. If you're on audio, leave us a 5-star review on the podcast app of your choice. Really does mean a ton. Enjoy the games this weekend. And until Monday, this has been First Pitch.